The E-12 Education Committee will come to order, and we have a number of fund transfers we're going to start out with. And then we have Senator Bonhoff's bill on shared services. And the first one we'll start out with is a bill that Senator Dill's authoring, Senate File 811. And I believe Senator Dill, if we...
It's your pleasure. I can if you want.
Senator Dill, do you want staff to just go through the proposal? Or I see you have a number of superintendents from the school districts. Maybe we should start out. What would be your pleasure?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for putting us on your agenda here. This Senate file is dealing with the McLeod West School District, which is in a process of consolidating with three other school districts. And the district has had a lot of trouble over the years passing levy referendums and continuing to operate, and a lot of the students have opened and rolled out. Plus, the buildings are starting to fall down and are no longer deemed safe in some areas for students to be in. So I've got the McLeod West school superintendent with me, Tony Boyer, who's the one who's shepherding this thing through and trying to figure out what to do with this school district. And then I've got one of the three school superintendents that's a receiving district for this consolidation, Dr. Clark from the Buffalo Lake Hector School District. And then I have the Alan Holtman, who is a bond or financial advisor for this problem we've got. So the bill before you, if you want your staff person to go through it, that would be fine. But the bill before you doesn't have any impact on state finances, but of course it does have some impact on the McLeod West School District.
Thank you.
And it's do you have the bill before you, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Dill, we do. And maybe I think it would be better to maybe have the testimony from the two superintendents and the finance officer and try to lay out the scenario, where you are and what your hope is for the bill.
Well, in that case, Mr. Chairman, I think I'd like to start with Mr. Tony Boyer, who is the superintendent of McLeod West.
All right. Thank you, Senator Dill. Please give your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Thanks for hearing this early this morning so we can get about our business, too. I'm Tony Boyer. I've been working with McLeod West for about 1 year. They asked me to come on board last year as a consultant to try to solve problems that have been deep-rooted in this district for a number of years. I gave them some advice last spring that they should tuition their high school students out and go to a K-12 school or a K-8 school. The board decided not to do that. They wanted to try one more year and get an operating levy in the falls, see if we could satisfy our debt. Over the course of the summer, we found it necessary to close down our educational wing of the building that we were in. So we had to tuition our students out, our 9-12 students out, and we still have our K-8 students. But right now we're down to 135 students of a possible 500 students that reside in the district. The rest have left the district through open enrollment. Our facilities are not good for our students, and consequently we have over the last 2 years have picked up a debt of almost $3 million based upon loss of enrollment and a building that has we cannot repair and students that we have to tuition out. Last fall, when we lost our operating levy, we contacted our neighboring districts and asked if any were interested in pairing with us, working with us, Three of our four neighboring districts indicated they would: Buffalo Lake, Hector, Gibbon, Fairfax, Winthrop, and Glencoe Silver Lake. But their statements was, or were, that we cannot be responsible for any debt incurred by the McLeod West District. McLeod West has gotten itself into this position. They need to get themselves out. We're willing to work with you, but we will not be responsible for any debt. Over the course of the last 3 months, we've been working, the four superintendents and Mr. Alan Hopeman of Northland Securities have been working and devising a consolidation plan. And part of that plan, we needed to come to you for statutory requirements. The only way that we could see, and with the advice of the Minnesota Department of Education, or at least with their input, that the best way to do that was to have a GO, a general obligation bond, that McLeod West would be completely responsible for. Without this, our neighboring districts would have to carry this debt at their expense annually for 5 years. With this, this debt would be completely carried by the McLeod West District and taxed to the McLeod West, the existing McLeod West constituents for the next 5 years. I think I've explained it as best I can. I certainly would take any questions. Dr. Clark is here for support that he's in agreement with the other two superintendents that this is the way we have to do this if we're going to have a consolidation.
Okay. Senator Dill?
Mr. Chairman, maybe before we proceed too far, there is an amendment to this bill to change the one number from 5 to 6. And it has to, we have a bond payback period of time here that doesn't coincide with the time when the money will be collected from the property taxes. So we need to extend the payback time from 5 to 6 years.
Okay, quick as we have a quorum, we'll adopt your amendment.
Okay.
Superintendent Clark?
Mr. Chairman, members, in advance, my name is Rick Clark. I will apologize in advance. I'm not very political. I'm an Irish Catholic boy out of New Jersey. And so sometimes in the Midwest, my candor is either positive or negative. But in this particular case, I can assure you of only one thing, and I will tell you the full truth and nothing but the truth, no matter how much it hurts. The bottom line to this is what's in the best interest of children has been interfered with for my entire tenure by adults who play games. This is about power. My job is about children. At this time, we have a different culture than their system. Members of the McLeod West District like our culture better than their culture. And at current time, we should have 485 students, resident pupil units, in our district. And we currently have a student population of 604. 23% of my district are his students. We entered into the consolidation effort because we would like to be able to direct our own future. We would like to establish the boundaries that these 112 students, who basically come from Stewart, a couple from Brownton, we would like to add them to our resident population to take advantage of our levy authority and the aid that comes into it. Our aid would be increased, although our referendum that is in place, $800 per pupil, would be marked down due to the formula to $764 per pupil unit. That represents $124,000 annual dollars. The consolidation also provides an incentive of $200 and $100 on the second year. We come up short. We will be under a consolidation or under a dissolution. We will be releasing the bottom tier of our paid staff, very quality people, new to our culture, and replacing them under Minnesota Statute 123A with very senior staff. The $160,000 over 2 years that our school will receive, adding one bus and the differential in pay, we're behind the ball right off the bat, $10,000. So the $180,000 pays down a debt of $190,000 over two. So what we want to do is have a consolidation to allow people to make their decisions based on what's in the best interest of children. We have agreed that the adult climate in these two communities requires for the future of any single district that the two towns be broken apart by design, not by luck. And so we are asking a dissolution to take place, a consolidation to take place that would put Brownton in one district, Stewart in another, and then move appropriate dollars from the old McLeod district to the placement with the new children. And what we're asking for is, under the current laws, a consolidation or under dissolution, the fund balances would be transferred by percentage. Buffalo Lake Hector would incur 35% of the debt of about $3 million. The cost of the new staff, the addition transportation, the interest, and the loss to our cash flow would cause us to borrow money from the MSBAT, from the Aid Anticipation Fund. That cost to our district and our taxpayers over the 5 years will be in excess of $325,000. And we don't believe that their decision should affect our taxpayers or our children under the reorganization to that effect. That is almost 50% of my undesignated fund, which we have had to work hard, and under current financial situations, we have a three-year plan to hold things together for the next 3 years without laying staff off. But if we don't get this money, we will be laying staff off in 2 years for sure. So we're asking to hold things together by allowing the general obligation bond to be passed. The holder of that bond would be the old McLeod County or McLeod West School District, and the other schools would be the collecting agents as trustees over 6 years to pay it back. Principal and interest under a general obligation would be held by the McLeod West School District and would incur no cost to the receiving districts or the reorganized host over that period.
Okay. Superintendent Clark and maybe Superintendent Boyer, and Senator Dill, maybe, the new makeup of those districts, would McLeod West disappear as a school district? And then, if I understand you correctly, the students of McLeod West would then go in different directions. Maybe two different other school districts would take the students. The existing McLeod West would be responsible for the debt. And then here's where I'm not sure I clearly understand what happens to the is it just a disillusionment of the McLeod West School District, or is it the staff that are at the current McLeod West going to Buffalo Lake and Hector School Districts? That is that what you're referencing, Superintendent Clark?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, under Minnesota Statute 123A and a number of its subdivisions, Pelrer laws require that seniority be combined. So based on this redistricting, Glencoe Silver Lake receives, we call assets pupil units, by residence, by mail. And so this allocation would put 50% of those assets in Glencoe Silver Lake, 35% of those assets in Buffalo Lake Hector School District, and 15 in the GFW School District. Therefore, once that takes place, you have the appropriate McLeod West personnel combined in an established rotation. I don't think I need to get technical on this, but basically what we're saying is each of the three reorganized hosts have to take a look at their seniority system and either place them from McLeod West into our seniority system appropriately and terminate current employees, or place them on URL, unrequested leave of absence, in order to follow PELRA and Minnesota statute appropriately. We, after resignations, terminations, the other, at Buffalo Lake, have 3.75, which will come our way. I believe it's nine that will teachers who will be placed or assigned to the folks at Glencoe Silver Lakes, and one staff member will be assigned to the GFW district. So, yes, there are terminations, but they are in the reorganized host districts, or they are placed from McLeod West if they are not licensed appropriately, or senior to the member who is in the host reorganized district. They are placed on URL. So somebody comes in, somebody has to leave to fulfill those obligations.
Are there any of the staff that will be taking retirement or early retirement? Superintendent Boyer?
Yes, Mr. Chair. This was part of the process of designing this consolidation agreement. We offered, McLeod West did offer, as by statute, did offer their staff retirement and severance benefits that you can statutorily. 11 of our 22 certified staff did accept the retirement severance or the severance. Some of them retired and some just accepted the severance and will move on. 11 determined that they would stay. Six of those were assigned then to Glencoe Silver Lake. Four were assigned to Buffalo Lake Hector, which was 3.75 FTEs, and one was assigned to GFW. The other 11 chose to retire and or to leave. Also, the non-certified staff were offered a benefit as well, and all 22 of those took their severance and left because at the pay rate that they would have received, it wasn't to their benefit to drive 40 miles for a $12 an hour job, or they felt such, and many of them were part-time work as well. So I hope that answers your question.
Yes, Superintendent, it did. So going back to Superintendent Clark, when you said that your budget was balanced for the next 3 years or at least intact, when you take on the six employees or staff from McLeod West, they're more senior, and consequently that would push out the younger staff and raise your costs. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, that is correct. However, the percentage of errors in my budget, we try to keep it at plus or minus 3%. So if we keep it at the plus 3%, we'll be fine even with those new folks in there over time, because we will be bringing the new students in to offset those costs. So we're going to come fairly close to our budget designation, although the 3% just rises for our plus or minus budget. So we will be able to hold that in place. Unless it goes to dissolution, then I'm going to be about $225,000 short, which will give me a balanced or reasonable budget for 2 years, but not three.
Okay, and maybe just explain the disillusionment. If it goes to disillusionment, then it's a different process.
The process, excuse me, Mr. Chair. The process is basically the same, except if we aren't consolidated, then the county commissioners of McLeod County, the county of the largest landmass, will be charged with redrawing the lines. That redrawing or redistricting then may include the Hutchinson School District, which then will offset the work that we've done and will dismiss any aid, the $200 of aid that we would get from the state in the first year, and the $100 of aid in the second year that would follow these children. There would be no aid, And consequently, the districts that are receiving then would not be held harmless. They would be charged with carrying this debt over the five-year period, which is a debt that they never incurred. And by carrying it, they have to pay for it, and some of them don't have the fund balances to do that, so they'd have to take out tax anticipation bonds annually to make that payment. That being the case, it would be a cost to that district, and they wouldn't be receiving any extra state aid to offset the costs of more senior staff coming into their staff because they had to lay off younger staff and accept more senior staff.
Okay.
Is that clear, sir?
Yes, I think synopsis is that it's a better plan to pass what you have here that you agree to and do it on your terms than it would be to do the disillusionment and have somebody who is not as thoughtful, maybe, as the districts.
Mr. Chair, if I could address that. I know the McLeod County Commissioners want absolutely nothing to do with this. This is not anything that they have ever done nor wish to do. They would like us to take care of this and do it expediently. And so that's what we're attempting to do. And I think the constituents of all of our neighbors agree that this is the very best thing that we can do. The ones that may disagree are the people of McLeod West. And that's simply because they have disagreed with everything that they've ever tried to do over the last 12 years. And that is a statement of fact. And that's unfortunate. But it is a statement of fact, and I feel bad about that. I think we can persuade them that this is the right thing to do. We're well on that track right now. And so I would hope that we can get your support in this effort because there is no cost to the state, and the cost is going to remain with the district, whether it's disillusionment or whether it's consolidation.
And now we understand the difficult job that Senator Deal has representing that part of the district out there. We have Ellen. Members, we do have a quorum, so if someone would like to move the A1 amendment, which Senator Dill explained is to address it changes the 5 to 6, and Mr. Nauman.
Mr. Chairman, there was a misalignment with the number of years and the property tax levy dates, and so this simply corrects that. It was noted in the fiscal note. With your permission, I'll also note that I think it's May 5th that all four school districts will have to vote on this question of consolidation. This bill will allow the property of the former McLeod West to be taxed for the bond payments over now 6 years with the amendment. If it's added, it allows the district to take some control over the consolidation process, as has already been noted.
And there is an urgency to do this so that they can prepare for that election. And Senator Salzman moves the A1 amendment. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. We have Mr. Alan Hopeman. Please give your name
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Alan Hopeman. I work for Northland Securities, and I'm a consultant to the McLeod West District on the consolidation process. And I just would like to clarify one thing, and that is that the $3 million debt under both the consolidation law or the dissolution law can be spread on the McLeod West taxpayers only, or it can be divided among the McLeod West taxpayers and the taxpayers in the new district. And all along in this process, there has been no disagreement that the McLeod West taxpayers would pay that $3 million debt. That would happen under the statute. What we're addressing here is the carrying cost of that debt. Without this bill, the three enlarged districts would have to borrow to cover the cost of that debt. And in two of the cases, these districts would actually, the amount of debt that they would be assigned after the consolidation would exceed their current fund balances. So they would, it wouldn't be considered part of their operating fund balance. It would be kind of in a separate fund. But until they have been able to collect that levy over 5 years, they would actually be in the hole, and they would have to borrow in the tax anticipation market in order to cover that debt. So what we're really trying to do here is to assign not only the $3 million, but also the bond issuance costs and the interest costs to the McLeod West taxpayers, which I think virtually everyone agrees is the responsibility of McLeod West.
Okay. Any other discussion, Senator Salzman?
Yes. A brief question, Mr. Chair. I know this is about operating debt, but all of the news reports on McLeod West really focused on the facility. And first of all, I want to thank all of you for coming together and working incredibly hard on this issue. And Senator Dill, I know this has been very difficult in your community, so I thank you for being here as well to really bring something to us on this issue. So on the facilities, I just wanted to ask a question perhaps, is how facilities perhaps led to this situation, and will there be facility issues moving forward? And the reason I ask is that I think a year and a half ago, Senator Wieger took the Education Policy Committee on a tour of southern Minnesota, and we heard repeatedly from some of those districts the difficulty they had in passing a bond referendum for a new facility, you know, 5 or 6 years, and how that impacted education. At the same time, because I am chairing the Charter School Working Group, essentially, a charter school can go out, and I have one in my community building a brand new $21 million facility that has no voter approval, and they can show up, and by filling out the paperwork, we'll get lease aid to essentially pay for that building that will not be owned by the public. So I'm trying to look at this in terms of, you know, as we study this situation, do you see facility issues coming forward, and could you reflect on if facilities had an issue? Because the news reports talked about, you know, a school building that was condemned, children having classrooms in the hallway. It was very, very troubling to me.
Thank you, Senator.
Superintendent Blair.
You are correct. The building that you're talking about, the McLeod West building that is remaining, 2 years ago they shut down the Stewart building and sold it to the community of Stewart. They kept open the Broughton building, and in either case, the buildings were not in good repair. One may have been better than the other one. One was larger than the other one. You can split hairs over what happened when. That's done. It's over with. What we have left is the Broughton building. Two wings of that building are operable. But the center wing, which is a 1922 building, which connects the two and houses the heating and all the electrical components, etc., is the one we had to close down and could not operate. That needs to be removed because it is just not safe to for children or anyone to be in. And so there is an effort to put a charter school in that facility. And the two wings that are remaining, could happen if they could remove the center of that building out of there. That's the concern that you have. And, yes, they did try from the get-go to pass a building referendum or a building bond in that district over 10 years. And I think they had three or maybe four failed referendums. And the last one was the one that broke the camel's back. And that's when they closed the Stewart building and when the Stewart population then left the district, along with the number of the Broughton population as well. And so that was kind of the impetus, and it was about buildings and about how that was handled. Am I missing part of your question, or did I answer most of it?
Senator Salzman.
So just to clarify, Mr. Chair, do you see that as there is this potential consolidation that facilities will be an issue moving forward? Are the other facilities in the new district, will there be a concern that in the future, because of this situation, it seems like there's a reluctance to pass additional levies, will there be facility issues in this district moving forward? And maybe that's for the others. I'm not sure.
Mr. Chair. And Senator Saltzman, I'll address the GFW and the Glencoe Silver Lake one, and I'll let Dr. Clark address the Buffalo Lake Hector. GFW has adequate facilities, and they have passed 2 years ago, I believe, a referendum for updating their facilities. And so their facilities are in good repair and will be able to house whatever students that they bring in. The Glencoe Silver Lake District, which will receive the Broughton building, is very willing to, once they have received it, to sell that property as soon as and turn it around immediately. And the Broughton community is willing to buy that and lease it back for a charter school, and that will happen sooner than you can click your fingers. I do believe that. So there will not be a facility issue there. What happens in Glencoe Silver Lake beyond that, I do not know. I know that they will be crowded to some degree, but I can't speak for that community. I just know that the Broughton building will no longer be an issue in the reorganized districts, and I do know that GFW will have ample room to house these students, and I'll let Dr. Clark address the Buffalo Lake Hector facility.
Superintendent Clark.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Saltz. Buffalo Lake Hector has two facilities. We can house poorly up to 900 students, and we have 612 bodies on our list, but we have 604 who regularly attend. That said, the main portion of the Buffalo Lake campus is 1916, and the new boiler is 53. So we have a few challenges there, but we keep the rain off the roof from running down the walls. We have ongoing repair, deferred maintenance issues. It is safe. We passed the health issues and all those sorts of things. However, it is challenging. That said, Glencoe Silver Lake, Buffalo Lake Hector, and several other schools participate with a regional special ed issue. And these new students could potentially, from Broughton into that facility, may displace the program we call transition. We are currently looking into the possibility of sharing that in a new location at Cosmos, which is ACGC school's facility, or possibly going over to Stewart in the old building. I am the consultant of record for the community of Stewart in the utilization or reutilization of the old school. My fee has been fully paid. It is a steak dinner and a bottle of O'Doul's over the consultation. But we are looking at this particular point, which leads us a little bit back to where we started with this about the adults. The Department of Education came in and did a research on this and said that the Stewart facility had utilized 75% of its life and said that the Broughton facility had basically exceeded its expected life, so they closed the Stewart facility and moved them into Broughton. That thought process escapes me somewhat, but that's what's done. So there is a facility. Now, it is difficult to use either facility because the folks of Stewart call the Department of Health when they eat lunch in the hallway at Broughton, but Broughton calls the fire marshal when anybody tries to use the Stewart facility. Once again, if we could take the adults out of the picture, we'd be done with this. But unfortunately, they have the votes. So what is in the best interest of the children? If we're going to move forward, we need this in place so we can move expediently to get to the May 5th. If we are unsuccessful in any of the quarters in the vote, we go to dissolution, and then we hand it back to you folks. Under dissolution, there will be an assignment. We don't know where the county will put it. Then the Commissioner of Education, who I'm sure is just very interested in acting upon this, and I'm not looking back at Dr. Melcher at all, and how this would be handled after May 5th, which is past the deadline under PELRA to notify tenured staff. So I'll be glad to turn that over. We are attempting to do 2 years' worth of work in 6 months, and we're down to the nitty-gritty. So with that, I will shut my Irish Catholic mouth and let you folks make a decision.
Seems like a lot of us work best under pressure. So. You know, you mentioned Dr. Melcher, and I'd like to just invite Dr. Melcher up for a comment, if possible, and just kind of get a sense of how the department looks on this. And
Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Tom Melcher with the Department of Education. We have extensive discussions with the school districts about the consolidation and about this bill, and we've felt that this bill was preferable to some of the earlier options that were talked about, including a state loan to the district to try to address the interest cost issue. The department doesn't have an official position on the bill. We have briefed the governor's office on the bill, and they're looking at it. We don't have an official response from them at this point, but I think the basic issue here is who should be responsible for the debts that were incurred by the McLeod West district. Should it be the taxpayers in McLeod West, or should it be the school kids in the other three districts? And it logically seems that it should be the folks that incurred the debt that should be responsible for paying it off.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Melcher. Okay, members, we have Senate File 811 as amended. And is there any other information, Mr. Nauman, that we need to know?
No, Mr. Chairman. I think you've covered the waterfront.
Okay. We do have a quorum, and Senator Koch, do you want to move Senate File 811 as amended?
Do you want it for possible inclusion, or are we moving it to the floor?
No, we because of the urgency, as mentioned, I think it's we need to move it to finance, and then Senator Cohen will take this up, I believe next week. So I think that's the approach.
So, Mr. Chair, then I'll move the bill as amended to finance.
Mr. Nauman?
Mr. Chairman, I apologize. I neglect to mention that if approved, we would see on our levy tracking for this year $598,000 in 11, $599,000 in 12, and $597,000 in 13. So that would be what we would reflect on our overall position if this were passed out of here today. Even though it's not part of the E-12 bill, that would be part of our levy tracking.
Okay. All right. Dr. Melcher?
Mr. Chairman, Tom Melcher at the Department of Education. I think it's important to recognize that under current law, the school districts would have the authority to make a reorganization operating debt levy for $600,000 a year, and so this would basically be essentially the same as that.
Okay. So, Mr. Hopi, did you want to make a comment? Or,
Mr. Chair, thank you. That my point was the same one Mr. Melcher just made.
And I wanted to just is there anyone else that wants to comment or testify on this? If not, Senator Koch moves Senate File 811 as amended and referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Thank you, Senator Dill and Superintendent Boyer and Clark and Mr. Kopi.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Next, we have Senator Sharon. We have several fund transfers, and two of them are transfers from the debt redemption fund, and one is a different fund transfer. Welcome, Senator Sharon. And
thank you. Thank you.
Let's see.
Thank you. I don't appear in front of this committee very often, so I'm happy to see you all here and to have a chance to introduce Senate File 731, which is an Independent School District 77 Mankato Fund Transfer Authorization. There should be a handout. I don't know if it's been distributed.
It has, Senator Sharon. It's just been handed out or is being handed out. And so we do have it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. This bill authorizes our independent school district number 77, which is in Mankato, to transfer up to $500,000 from its debt redemption fund to its undesignated general fund. without making any levy reduction. I have with me the superintendent of School District 77, Ed Waltman, and we'd be happy to answer any questions you have about this Senate file.
Thank you, Senator Sharon. Superintendent Waltman, if you could give your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Ed Waltman. I'm superintendent for Mankato Area Public Schools, and I'm very pleased to be here today on behalf of our school board and our legislative committee, which consists of parents, students, and educators. The background information about this transfer is that we have a good problem in our school district. Our student enrollment is growing. That's certainly not true across the state of Minnesota. We're anticipating the growth of another 500 students over the next 5 years. We've already grown by 400 students in our elementary schools in the last 4 years. We are already over capacity in our elementary schools. This anticipated growth, and combined with the fact that our community has been very conservative. It's been since 1966 that we built a new elementary school. In fact, we're one of the few school districts in the state of Minnesota that still operate three elementaries that were built in the 1920s. But our voters last April did approve the construction of a new elementary school. The estimated annual operating costs for this new elementary for fixed costs, and you have those costs outlined in your handout, which include a new principal, administrative support staff within in the office, the utilities, the custodial staff, the nurse, the guidance counselor, and those services totals approximately $500,000. Our initial plan to fund these costs, and the school is scheduled to open, excuse me, in September of 2010, was to reserve a portion of the basic general education revenue from the increased student counts that we have to support not only the new teachers that we need to hire, but also to fund the basic operating costs that are outlined in your packet. However, in these unique economic times, the best plans certainly run into difficulties. And what we've seen is that our district is short for next year $3 million. We presented our budget adjustment plan to our community this last Monday for a reduction of $3 million, 56 positions, including 30 teaching positions, as a result of what we believe will be funding that you will not be able to provide us over the next 2 years. This transfer is unique. You normally do not fund transfers from the debt service fund to the general fund. We realize that. We're here to make the case that these are unique times that call for different actions than maybe have happened in the past. My research shows the last debt service fund that was approved by the legislature was for the Rockford School District in the 2005 year. So you have done it in the past, but it's not normally done because usually these dollars that are built up through the reserve and the debt fund is returned to the property taxpayers. We believe that it's important to open this new school in our community. I think you know there are other situations in Minnesota where the schools have not been able to be open after the voters have approved referendums. We would hate to see this happen. This would give us the opportunity to open this school on September 1 of 2010 with reserving these money for those fixed costs. We believe we'll have the money for the teachers to provide the direct services to children, but not the fixed costs. Our reserve in the debt service fund, as your printout shows, is approximately $1 million at this time. We're asking to transfer $500,000 of that, maintain the other $500,000 as the needed reserve, of course, to protect the bondholders against any economic turndown in terms of property tax collections. With that said, I will thank you again, and I'll answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Superintendent Waltman. Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering how did you get the reserves in the debt fund balance? I wasn't clear about that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling, school districts are allowed to levy 105% of your debt service requirement to make sure that you have enough reserve to protect the bondholders in case there is large tax delinquencies. In addition to that, reserves build up in the school districts because we receive the tax collections in May and in the fall, and then we pay the bond payments once a year and we pay interest twice a year. So there's 5 or 6 months we're allowed to have money in the debt service where we short-term invest it and make those investment earnings. So most school districts in the state, if they're
handling their debt service fund correctly, are building up somewhat of a surplus. I should tell you, compared to our total community value, the rebate would be very small, because normally the money goes back to the taxpayers each year. The Department of Education, as Mr. Melcher can attest to, tells us how much our reserve is over the amount that we should carry, then that's rebated to the taxpayers. For us, this rebate would be between $10 and $15 on a normal home. I think our citizens would like to see this new school built. They're not being charged any more than we told them when we passed the referendum, because the reserves could never be included in that projection to tell them that's going to be lower than it actually is going to be.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roblin.
So is the transfer just for 1 year, just to get the new building open?
That is correct. Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling, that is correct. This is a 1 year to get us through these tough times, to get us started, and then we realize that it'll become one of our regular decisions that we have to make in terms of difficult choices with finances, but it'll be a top priority at that time. It really takes this item off the discussion right now as far as the other major problem that we're all faced with is how do we provide adequate operating dollars for our entire school district, and in your case, the entire state of Minnesota.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Superintendent. I was trying to follow your explanation. I'm trying to understand. Maybe you can explain a little more in detail. When you agreed to do this, build a new school, and your statement was in your handout here talks about funding this through the increase in enrollment, that the additional dollars coming in because of increase in enrollment would fund this project. And then I was just doing some quick figuring, and it looks like there's over $500,000 a year on average that would come in over the next 5 years if you have a 500-student increase. And so it seems like that the increase in enrollment would cover the costs that you're pointing to. And so I'm trying to understand why is the need there then to take the money out of the debt service and transfer it if the increased enrollment does cover those costs.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hahn.
Superintendent Walton.
You're absolutely correct in your calculations, and that's why we think you need a one-time transfer may get us through this time. What you need to realize is that all 500 students are not going to be in the district at the time we open up the school. We'll have a student growth of about 250 of those 500 students when we open the school. So if we can get it open, then the next 2 or 3 years later, afterwards, the additional 250 students will come into the school district. So that's the plan here, and that's why we think a one-time transfer will serve us well in this situation.
And Mr. Chairman, Senator and Superintendent, was this circumstance not known at the time the building was planned? I mean, part of your comment was that something changed in the interim between the time you put the plan together that you felt you could finance it out of increased enrollment only, and now you're saying you can't, and I'm trying to find out what happened that created the change in your planning that now requires the debt service money.
Superintendent.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hahn, what happened is the economic downturn across our country. At the time we planned the referendum, which was a year and a half before we even passed it in April of last year, we felt that our district was an excellent financial situation. In fact, only Edina and Mankato for the last 7 years have received the State Minnesota Finance Award. What's happened to us is we've seen increased special education costs. We're a regional center, and due to the proration of special education aids, last year we saw a downturn in our special education revenue of over $1 million over what we normally would have anticipated receiving. In addition to that, this transfer is in anticipation of the difficult action that you're going to have to take. The governor's proposal is to freeze our revenue for the next 2 years. We have contracts in place with three of our employee groups for next year, as well as our bus operators. We will have increased costs next year. So that's what's changed since the time we initially thought we could provide the adequate funding for opening the school when we planned the building 2 years ago.
And Mr. Senator Chairman and Superintendent, just so I'm clear, so the planning was that you were anticipating increased state funding at the time the plan was put together, increased aid to the general fund or increased dollars on the fund, and that was a part of your calculation that also supported the increase in contract obligations that you made to employees, so that you were, wherever you were assuming additional money would be added to the formula, which supported the increase in contracts that you settled and provided for the payment of the future obligation. And then when you're looking now and saying, well, there's not perhaps a large likelihood that the increase in funding is going to come. That's put you in the bind. Is that essentially what you're saying?
Superintendent?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hahn, not quite essentially what we're saying. Once again, my point is we were anticipating our district would maintain an excellent financial conditions in all of the other areas. And what's changed is, and we would have been able to meet those obligations. What we're faced with right now is, particularly I think in any community, it's hard for the citizens to separate why are you opening up a new school when you have all these other financial difficulties. And we couldn't, I don't think anyone could anticipate the economic downturn that we've seen in our country and in Minnesota at the time we decided to build the building. And that's what we're faced with, is slightly different than what you're saying.
Well, and Mr. Chairman and Superintendent, I appreciate the economic downturn. What I'm not connecting is how the economic downturn affects the financing of your district. It doesn't affect anything. The only thing that I'm hearing that is affecting the financing of your district is the lack of prospective increase in funding from the state. And that's my question. If that is the only thing that has changed is now that you're no longer as confident that there will be an increase in funding from the state, and that's requiring this change, that's what I'm trying to clarify. Is that essentially it?
We didn't send it all the way up to the fund.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hahn, that is not what I'm trying to say, and I must not be explaining myself adequately. We've had an unanticipated special education cost of over $1 million because of prorations in the state formulas, which were approved that we couldn't necessarily anticipate. In addition to that, the current economic downturn has us concerned about our ability to do this. If you do provide an increase in funding, we're requesting authorization for this transfer. We have a great relationship with our citizens. If we get adequate funding to provide for our expenditures for the next 2 years, we will not make this transfer.
Superintendent, I might have heard something a little bit different in your explanation. You were talking about as a new building opens up that some of the costs that I'm assuming the transfer would be used for, the $500,000 would be used for, would be capital costs or would they be general operating costs?
Mr. Chairman, they'd be general operating costs.
Okay, so then I did mishear what you were saying. How is the district's overall debt in terms of being, where are you in terms of your overall debt?
Our overall debt, we're at about, I would say about $40-some million right now in debt, which is fairly small for a district of our size.
Okay. Are the bonds paid off for the as you described, the 105% that's levied, are the bonds paid off from those dollars that are basically accumulated in your debt redemption fund?
Mr. Chairman, we still have a number of bond referendums or bond debt still outstanding. The largest one is from the total renovation of Mankato West High School in 1991 and the construction of Dakota Meadows Middle School in 1991. Those will be paid off in approximately 3 years. In addition to that, we've had two smaller referendums to prepare to replace roofs and to do tuck pointing that are still outstanding. So to answer your questions, they're not all paid off yet. We'll be shortly.
Yeah, I guess, and it's hard to look into your finances, but the decision to transfer the $500,000, are the bondholders secure in terms of that those bonds being paid off?
Mr. Chairman, they should be. We still are relieving enough reserve, I believe, to meet the requirement to ensure that the bondholders are secure.
Okay. Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hamm.
Mr. Chairman, I'm troubled by this proposal, and And I, because as near as I can tell from looking what's been presented and from the testimony, is there was a plan that was put in place that was assuming increase in funding from the state. And I think that's not a good basis to make a plan. And we used to have a structural balance law that required districts as they did their planning to try to anticipate into the future. Now, we eliminated that requirement a couple of years ago. I was not in favor of that, by the way, but you remember we had a pretty healthy discussion about that.
Senator Hahn, this year is going to be a test for us.
Well, I appreciate that. But here's my point, is that if you look at the numbers, I mean, they're in a very fortunate situation. They have increased students. And if you're getting 500 students for the next 5 years, and if half of them are coming in next year, that's, you know, $1.5 million just in increased enrollment alone. But that doesn't seem to be sufficient to cover the costs. That seemed to be, to me, the assumption was that we would be increasing the formula. And I'm not sure that that's fair, then, to the taxpayers to say, well, we're going to not return the money to you as law requires, but we're going to use it because we built a plan on the basis of an assumption that we could not control. And I'm just a little troubled by that. And I Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the desire to open the school, but I'm not sure why there wouldn't be sufficient funds to do that just from increased enrollment. And so I'm troubled by this at this point.
Superintendent, thank you, Senator Hahn. Superintendent, is, and Senator Hahn kind of frames the question, are you in need of the $500,000? And I know the back of the sheet that you handed out, are you assuming the increase of the 250 students with this budget that you've laid out? So it would be actually be, you know, whatever the dollar amount would be on the new students plus the $475,000?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I obviously haven't made myself clear, at least to some members. First of all, the anticipation of increased revenue was increased student revenue from the new students that led us to believe to build a new school. It's not the formula increase, it's the driving factor in not anticipating this current need. And the other thing I haven't made clear, I guess, is that we have committed the new revenue that you're mentioning to hiring the 20-some teachers and specialists, paraprofessionals, and support staff that will go into this building. Where we're coming up short, in my estimation, will be to those fixed costs that go with any new building. So we are committing in our budget the new revenue for the new students to hire the teachers. We're not coming here to ask you to transfer the money for the additional teachers, paraprofessionals. That's what we're going to use that additional revenue from the new students coming to us. So what we'll be short is those next few years where we need to get the additional students to pay the entire cost. You would need a reserve to open up the new school, which we don't have because of increased special education costs and what we believe will be an impact of the economic downturn. I hope that clarifies.
Ms. McQuaid?
Mr. Chair and members, Senator Sharon, just to make this clear for the other fund transfers that we've done in the past, I just like to make a recommendation to change undesignated balance in the general fund to undesignated general fund balance. So that would be after line 8, insert general fund. And on line 9, strike in the general fund.
Okay. Senator Bonhoff moves the amendment to on line 1.8 to delete undesignated balance in the general fund and insert. Just undesignated. Okay. Delete on line 1.8 undesignated and then delete that, right? Okay. after, let me clarify this. After line 1.8, add general fund, and then on line 1.9, delete in the general fund.
Correct?
Okay. On that amendment, any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roblin.
You know, one of my districts went through something similar to this, where we built a building and couldn't afford to open it for a year. But it actually cost us quite a bit of money to mothball it because it still had to be heated and secured and all of those things. And, you know, it's a bad position to be in. The public was very unhappy that the building was there and not being used when we had overcrowding in some of the other buildings. I wish I would have thought of this. I don't know if they had a balance in their debt reserves or not. But, I do think that once the building is ready for occupancy and there are student needs, it probably is a good idea to figure out some method to let this happen, because it was very unpopular in my district, and I think that if we can help somebody out and they have a fund balance somewhere else, it's probably a wise thing to do.
Okay. Superintendent, one last question. If by chance this does not pass, what would you cut to, what would be your approach?
Mr. Chairman, we have a six-month, and members of the committee, we have a six-month process to go through budget reductions, which, as I mentioned, we just finished. We have a lot of input from our citizens before we make these decisions. However, as I reported to you, for the $3 million, we're cutting 56 full-time equivalent positions in our school district for next year. So we'd be in a similar basis, because right now, because of our buildings being at capacity, we can't close school buildings. So our choices are 90% people of the rest of the items that are included in the general fund. So it would be somewhat of a proration of in higher class sizes, less support staff would likely occur in order to pay the price to open this new building.
Okay. Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hand.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Superintendent, to that point, would it be possible to go to your employee groups and ask for a freeze in their salaries or a reduction in pay so that they wouldn't have to be let go but could be kept employed at maybe a lower cost? Is that a possibility?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, we in our legislative proposal have included a provision that the state of Minnesota calls for a wage freeze for all public employees in our legislative platform. We have to negotiate in good faith by the Public Employees Relation Act. We do have an excellent relationship with our employees. However, as I mentioned, we have agreements we have seven different unions. We have agreements with four of those for next year already that I don't know what that would do. It would almost take action by you. We can't ask them, I think, to go back on those. But we are having those discussions with our employee groups, and I think that will probably have to happen in terms of the big picture of maintaining our programs that we presently have across all 16 of our school sites.
Okay. On Senate File 731 as amended, Senator Bonhoff moves that be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus education bill. Any other discussion? Not all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion is adopted. Thank you.
Thank you very
Senator
much.
Sharon,
thank you,
and Superintendent Waltman.
Thank you.
Next, we have Senate File 737, Senator Marty.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. This is also a fund transfer bill for St. Anthony New Brighton District 282, and it would take $400,000 one time from the operating capital account to the general fund. I have with me Rod Thompson, the superintendent, and Kristen Holheisel, the director of business services.
Correct.
Okay, welcome. Thank you, Senator Marty. Mr. Thompson, or Superintendent Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. What we are asking for today is we are a 4 or 5 section smaller school district on the first ring suburbs of Minneapolis in the northeast section. And what we're looking at is about a projected $500,000 worth of cuts out of about a $14 million general fund budget. And what we're hoping to do is, as you have done many times in the past, given permission to have a safety net resource for our district of up to $400,000. And I think it's very important for you to know that we are going up to, because in the case that we were able to perhaps get some relief through the decisions that you will make, we would not have to use all of the $400,000. We would not have to use any of the $400,000 because we're a very fiscally responsible district who are making the same kinds of difficult decisions and cuts as all of our other colleagues are in public education. But we're trying to be as fiscally responsible and as planful as possible. And maybe as previously you were discussing with the Mankato District, we have staffing decisions in front of us. We're going to make those difficult decisions, and we're going to notify staff that they will need to be reduced. But what this would provide is some planful reductions, but then also give hope to employees that through us being fiscally responsible, making tough decisions, that we would be able to maintain as many of our programs in a small district as possible and maintain as many of our teachers in the classrooms as possible. So that's why we're coming to you, is to provide us this safety net. And it is something that you have allowed as recently as last year on several occasions. A distinction would be that this is a capital transfer into our general fund.
Okay. Ms. Hoheisel?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and you are accurate in that pronunciation.
Thank you.
What I would like to mention is during the last legislative session, districts were afforded the opportunity to make a one-time transfer from their operating capital into their general fund. This did not work for St. Anthony New Brighton at that time, and the reason why is we were in the middle of a referendum. So it is very hard to make the statement that we don't need operating capital when we're out in an election that occurred in May. We were not in any position to make that statement. However, I believe that our financials, and with the passage of a portion of the referendum, which we are doing alternative facilities and deferred maintenance, with the passage of that, it has freed up operating capital dollars that we had in reserve that we were saving to help maintain the ongoing maintenance of our buildings.
Ms. Hoheisel, could you give your name for the record, please, and then also your title?
My apologies. My name is Kristen Hoheisel, and I am the Director of Business Services with the St. Anthony New Brighton School District.
Thank you. Members, we have a small amendment that I would ask someone to offer. At the end of line 1.9, Senator Saxhog moves it, without making a levy reduction should be added after balance. So it would, the sentence would read, may permanently transfer up to $400,000 from its reserved for operating capital account to its undesignated general fund balance without making a levy reduction. Okay, Senator Saxhog moves that. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Superintendent or Ms. Superintendent, what would the school district not do in the area of capital expenditures if this passed?
Mr. Chair, one of the things that we're currently operating under is we have our taxpayers and our residents have approved $21 million in our district to take care of deferred maintenance and also our health and safety issues as far as indoor air quality. And so we have been able to address those through the taxpayers so far. If we were not, if we were to take some money out, up to $400,000 out of capital, what we would be looking at then is that has been in a reserved account and it's undesignated at this time. And so the specifics of where that would go would have to go through our local planning and our local school board, because what we're finding, I might say a positive in a tough economic times, is that some of our colleagues who are also, we're currently out for bid right now, and what some of our colleagues are seeing is some relief in terms of some of the construction companies and other are fairly hungry right now, and some of our districts are seeing some increased bang for the buck at this time, and so we feel more comfortable than ever coming before you asking for this type of a safety net, because we feel those reserves right now are truly reserves, and we were very fortunate that we got most of our needs taken care of through this last referendum.
Okay. One thing I point out to members and Senate Counselor Mr. Nauman could correct me, but on the unreserved operating or on the operating capital account, we do not track the levy. So if you look on that, is that correct, Mr. Nauman?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
All right, Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Superintendent Ms. Hoheisel. Can you tell me what is your the reserve amount for your general fund right now? How much do you have in reserves?
Senator Chairman, currently we have approximately, at the end of our audit of 2008, we had approximately $400,000 to $450,000, and we would be looking at increasing that by approximately $100,000 at the end of this fiscal year.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Ms. Hoheisel, what percentage of that is does that reserve represent?
Ms. Hoheisel?
Senator Chairman, it would reflect, if we went up to $400,000, it would reflect probably about 80% to 85% of our fund balance.
And Mr. Chairman and Ms. Hoheisel, what I'm trying to understand is that typically boards have, by board action, adopted a fund balance amount for their general fund and their other funds. And my question is, do you currently have a general fund balance that is compliant with your policy as a board, and what that amount is? And
Ms. Hoheisel?
Senator Chairman, yes, we do. We currently have, of our general fund, we currently are within board policy, and of a percentage of our general fund, we are at about 10% of our general fund that we have in reserve for operations.
And Mr. Chairman and Ms. Hoheisel, that's kind of my question, is why would you not then use those reserves for the purpose that you're asking for money from another account to fund?
Superintendent?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator. We do in fact intend to make reductions that would, as we forecast, would reduce the amount that is in our general fund reserves. Our local school board has asked us to come to you and ask for the ability to go up to 400, because we want to be very planful and respectful to our residents, as we just went to them for significant dollars, levy dollars. And so rather than what we have found from our auditors is that we have had a history of trying to maintain a couple $100,000 of reserves, and we get dinged each time that that's not good enough. And so over the course of the last 2 to 3 years, we've raised that up to that 6 to 8%, and we're starting to get in a comfort level of good accounting practices. And now what our school board is saying is that we have proven to our taxpayers that we're fiscally responsible. We've been very conservative in our approach. And now, as soon as we got for the first time into compliance, now we're going to go right out of compliance again and perhaps lose some of the faith that we've done a good job in with our dollars. We're hoping that we will make those, and we will make those tough decisions, but what we would like to do is maintain policy and be fiscally accountable and responsible to the citizens and the taxpayers. We also understand that our policy was set up of the 6 to 8%, knowing well that in very tough economic times, the purpose for that fund balance also is to allow us to get rid of the roller coaster approach of taking employees and cutting, adding. So we're hoping to take the edges off, and what this would allow us to do is make our plans, not knowing when you will finish your good work. We will be able to make some plans and have some contingencies in place, but we do plan and have had discussion at a school board level that we can't expect to maintain the current fund balance. However, it is very important that we don't forget that good accounting practices, we have to have that money there in the emergency cases that we can't forecast at this time.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Hoheisel, you'd mentioned earlier in your testimony that the opportunity to do this last year, you forewent. You didn't take advantage of that last year. And again, what was the reason why you didn't do that?
Senator, Chairman.
Ms. Hoheisel? Hoheisel.
The reason why was we were actually, our election was in May. And at that time, as the election was playing out, quite frankly, if it wouldn't have passed, we would have needed operating capital just to help patch what the referendum is now fixing. So with the passage of the referendum, we weren't quite in a position to make the June 30th deadline to allow the school board to vote and say, yes, we're now whole again in our operating capital, and it's not necessary for us.
Okay.
Superintendent, what are the pupil counts that you have?
Mr. Chair, our total student body is in the ballpark of about 1,750 students, K through 12.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? Senator Saxog, you want to move?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move that we pass the bill, and do you want it on the table, or is
yes,
this?
I think I'll lay it on the table.
Lay it on the table
inclusion.
For possible inclusion.
Any other discussion? Senator Saxon, move Senate File 737 as amended to be laid on the table for inclusion in the omnibus education finance bill. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted.
Thank you very much, Mr.
Thank
Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Marty and Superintendent and Ms. Hoheisel. Is Senator Kubley? Oh, Senator Kubley. Senate File 939. Welcome. And Senator Kubley.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. the Senate file before you deals with the Ortonville Independent School District, which is one of about 21 school districts in our Senate district. You know, I guess they're talking about another issue of transferring some of the debt redemption fund dollars, and Superintendent Jeff Taylor is with me from the Ortonville District, and I'd like to refer to him to explain the bill a little bit, Mr. Chair, and possibly take your questions.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Kubley. Superintendent Taylor, please give your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, Senate Committee members, my name is Jeff Taylor, Superintendent of Schools in Ortonville. I don't know how much more you want to hear about consolidation today. I sat through your previous testimony and things, but this does come about because of a consolidation. Currently, the Ortonville and Bellingham School District have passed a consolidation last September. We're in the process of working through all the details of getting that completed. Hopefully tomorrow I'll be having a board meeting where we're going to pass an agreement for dealing with severance and retirement with our teaching staff in both districts. It's been an experience that every administrator should have to go through some point in time. It's been very frustrating, but it's been very learning experience that it is educational for me. The reason for the request is, As we look at what we're dealing with in this consolidation, we find that the dollars made available to us over the 2 years, the $100 or $200 in the first year, $100 in the second year, do not meet the needs of the district in order to get this consolidation completed. By making this transfer, and this is from the Ortonville School District, the Ortonville Board had made the decision to do this for the help of the benefit of the consolidated district, would help us make this consolidation run go much smoother. We need to purchase a bus for additional bus route. We're hiring additional staff. This does allow us this would allow us to help in making that transition. Give you an example, 3 years ago we purchased or we leased buses. At that time those buses were costing about $62,000. That exact same bus this year is over $80,000 for us to purchase. So this would allow us and help us to make this transition and getting this consolidation completed.
Superintendent, just a couple quick questions. Is the $100 and $200 that you mentioned, is that under the cooperation and consolidation plan? Or
Mr. Chair, that's the money I'm referring to there is the money that's made available from the state to help in the consolidation process.
And is that also that also deals with the costs in staff movements? How did you use that $100 and $200? And then just address the, as those two districts were consolidated, the staff, the changes in the staffing.
Mr. Chair, The money being used right now, we'll receive $200 in the first year, which will be next year. Those monies have been used to help us through the consolidation process. We worked with the attorneys drawing up all the agreements. We worked with a consulting firm helping us with the consolidation plan as we had to go forth before the both the school districts and communities, providing us proper information, tax information as we looked at the consolidation. The monies will be used to hire up to four additional staff for next year as those Bellingham students come into the Ortonville building. So those monies are being spent right now to complete the consolidation, to get staff in place, provide bus routes, equipment, those types of things.
And does the money come after you incur the expenses, or does it come as you incur the expenses?
It'll be coming after we incur the expenses. We've incurred many of these expenses already, which we're already paying for. We'll receive the first $200 next year, as way I understand it, as we begin the next year's process, the levy process. The two districts' levies will be combined somehow by the department, and they will then look at how the Ortonville and Bellingham levies mesh together. And it's my understanding that we will get $200 next year based upon how that all falls into place with the department.
And members, I just want to point this out and take an opportunity probably a little bit later to try to solicit your ideas. And then I think we need to look at, as we look at our problem with the budget right now and we try to look forward, I think we need to look at how we might assist districts looking at structural change out there. And this is not the only instance of, two districts trying to work together. We saw the problem with McLeod and Buffalo Lake and those districts. And I think we have over time done little patchworks here and there, but I think when we need to solicit ideas on how we might be more facilitative in helping school districts who are trying to make some pretty big decisions. It might not be big to us, but it's certainly big in their different districts. And one of the things is with the QComp, we saw that earlier where the small districts basically have backed away from it because the way the money comes and the expenses are up front, and they don't have the wherewithal to expend the money to get into the program that actually does them good in improving their quality of education. So I think this is another case where we need to try to look forward and come up with some creative ideas. And I'm not sure exactly how that plan will work its way out, but I think we're not going to move away from the problems that we have now. I think those problems are going to be around for some time.
Well,
Senator Kubley.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I guess Superintendent Clark from Buffalo Lake Hector just requested that he be allowed to say a few words to the issue you were addressing.
Please join us here. I think it feeds into a very important part of what we're trying to do this session, I think.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members. I'm an awful lot like a bad penny. I keep coming back. at this point, I can tell you that Senator Stump's comments are very accurate. There are six pairs of schools out there at this time, in addition to Buffalo Lake Hector and this consolidation process, and we're looking for assistance how we can put this together. Buffalo Lake Hector is currently involved with the McLeod consolidation. We are having discussions with Bold and Renville County West schools to put together a cooperative venture with the Renville County schools, potentially, and we are hoping in 3 to 5 to have a plan, in 5 to 10 to have a consolidation of a Renville County school. And at this particular point, there are old statutes on your books currently that are unfunded that would assist in construction and those other activities. If there were just followed through with the laws with some revenue stream, you would avoid hearing folks like me from time to time, and it would all be in place, and you could move forward with that. But you have laws in place at this time that would take care of construction, transportation. There's also the challenges of bringing folks together. And as a comment was made before the meeting began here, in jest, but old school, getting superintendents together to have a conversation and agreement is a unique experience. We have just come to a conclusion, having four superintendents come to unanimous decision on 100% of the activities. We believe that's the future, and we hope not to be graded on our past. And so we are currently looking at four schools to our east coming together, and we are looking at three schools, including us, on the west side that are coming together. And you will have more consolidation that won't sit on your table, and we will be able to accomplish that if we have a revenue source, if we have the carrot in front of us to assist us to move that forward.
I think we need to solicit comments from those who are out in the field to figure out how we can kind of look toward some kind of a future. I personally think that the challenge for us is how can we maintain the school facilities in our communities at a reasonable cost? The problem, that there's a number of problems. One is having trying to get people together to make decisions. Another one is we have this facilities problem that came up this morning, is that we got a lot of old buildings out there that we don't have a way to maintain or upgrade, or in some cases actually build some new ones. So, I mean, we got a number of challenges ahead here, and it seems like the future, we need to come up with some kind of a plan, and that's
Senator Stumpf, members of the committee.
I
am here to offer my assistance in any fashion. I would like to move from the status quo. I believe it's in the best interest of children to find the most efficient and effective way, and I will be here at your beck and call to find solutions if you can stand me at a table.
Okay, thank you, Superintendent. All right, Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Superintendent Taylor, a question. This $200,000 transfer, what does that represent on a per pupil basis? What will that compute to?
Superintendent Taylor.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hand, currently we have approximately 517 students enrolled in the Ortonville district. So I guess whatever the math works out there.
Mr. Chairman and Superintendent.
Senator Hand.
Senator Scogin is suggesting it's about $400 per pupil. My question is, when you were planning this consolidation and you had the $200 from the state and then another $100, was it anticipated that the cost would be more than double that? And, I mean, was this always part of the plan that you would need to, or what changed that now requires the, you know, additional $400 per pupil to make this work?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hahn.
Superintendent.
No, that was never planned. In fact, this never even came up until I started following legislation and seeing some types of the legislation that was being proposed. As we begin to work through the plans and the details of the consolidation, it become quite evident that the money that we are going to receive to get this consolidation done is not near enough to make expenses, to meet expenses. And by making this transfer, it does allow us to make that transition a little bit easier.
Well, and Mr. Chairman,
Superintendent,
and Superintendent, I'm concerned about the planning that went into this that would say the monies that we're going to get through this consolidation fund would be sufficient to achieve the goal, and now we're saying it's actually going to be half of what the needs are. Is the plan, was the plan so far off that half of the funding for it couldn't be accomplished? I mean, I'm just, that's a pretty significant gap to say, well, here's the plan, we're going to do the consolidation, here's the money, we can do it, and then come back and say, well, we really need twice that much money, or more than twice.
I think one of the problems with small schools is that the numbers are relatively, the expenses are about the same, but the numbers are small. I just want to refer back to QCOMP. That's the problem when you have, say, a school of, 200-300 students, and you get, let's say, $100 or $200 or $260 as the QCOMP is. You add that up, and then I think you get, like, $20,000-$30,000. Well, it doesn't go anywhere. I mean, you can't hardly hire subs, let alone try to develop the plan and stuff.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I understand, Senator, and I appreciate that there are challenges to the different districts depending on the – and there's lots of variables. But what I'm trying to get at is what kind of planning was done, because this is a fairly significant increase from what they originally thought they could do. I mean, I think if you said, well, I can do something for – $100, and then you come back and you make an estimate to somebody that you're going to pay $100, and you come back and say, oh, no, it's really $200. People raise their eyebrows and say, how can you be so far off on your estimate of what it's going to take? And, Mr. Chairman, I also like to ask the superintendent if they took advantage of the operating capital transfer opportunity last year, the $51 per student. Did they do that?
Superintendent Taylor.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hahn. I guess maybe the first try to answer the first part of your question in regards to the planning process. When we went into this and it was passed by both districts, we had no idea in regards to what the costs were going to be in regards to severance retirement benefits in working with the staff. We are just now getting that process completed. That will cost the new district considerable amounts of money. It looks like to me over a period of years to pay for those types of things to keep all staff employed in the district that want to be employed. That was not a part of the original planning because we didn't have an idea where we might be at that point in time when the vote passed. We began working on that once the vote passed. As we worked through that process, and it's been a long, frustrating process, very evident that the money we received, the $200 and $100, doesn't even come close to making those types of expenses or meeting those types of expenses. We will continue to be a school district of declining enrollment. We will next year, under consolidation, have approximately the same number of kids in our building as Ortonville has this year. We would be probably somewhere in the vicinity of 480 students next year. Ortonville alone, combined with Bellingham, it'll be somewhere in the vicinity of 520. We're about 518, 17 this year. So it buys us back, a couple years of lost enrollment is what happens with the consolidation. I need maybe to give you a little more background. The Ortonville-Bellingham school districts have been tuitioning students. The Bellingham School District have been tuitioning high school students to Ortonville since early 1990s. We've had a good relationship with them. They came to the Ortonville District because of their SOD debt. They were not able to continue to operate. And because of our relationship, the two boards made that decision to enter into this consolidation. And so through that process, we have found that we are not able to, and this will just help us get that done. We are spending down our fund balance right now. The board has made conscious decisions the last 2 years to put together budgets to spend down the fund balance of the Ortonville District. Next year, we should be close to having a balanced budget, it looks like, because of the increased enrollment. But after that, we will continue to see declining enrollment. We will continue to have to spend down any fund balance we have from that standpoint. In regards to the capital, we spend our capital dollars that we have in our budget on a yearly basis. We have spent down any reserve we had in our capital there. That money has pretty much been expended in our budget there. We just felt that this became an opportunity for us to try to help make a smoother transition here in this whole process.
And so, Mr. Chairman and Superintendent, Senator, just to be clear, you did not then transfer operating capital last year?
Superintendent Taylor?
No. I don't believe we've transferred any operating capital. We spent our operating capital that we've had. We've never done a transfer.
All right.
Okay. Members, there is an amendment that needs to take place on this as well. On line 1.8 after at the end of the line, add operating. And then on 1.9, delete in the general fund. And if somebody would offer
Mr.
that.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Scogin offers that amendment. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Any other discussion? Any comments? Senator Scogin moves that Senate file 939 as amended be laid on the table for inclusion in the omnibus education bill. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Thank you, Senator Kubley.
Thank you, Mr.
Superintendent Clark. We will probably take you up on your offer to help us with some way to look at future changes. So we appreciate that. Superintendent Taylor, too.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
The motion prevails, if I didn't already say that. Okay, and the last proposal we have is Senator File 10, Senator Bonhoff. And we have an amendment to that bill. And amendment, I believe, is being handed out or is handed out. That's the A-3 amendment. Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you very much. And I move the A-3 amendment. This is a delete all, or it's an amendment that takes the shared purchasing part of Senate File 10 and is just addressing that.
Okay.
In addition, Mr. Chairman, I do have an oral amendment as well.
All right.
On line 1.5, before the word services, add business.
I do not have. Oh, okay. All right. Senator Bonhoff moves the A-3 amendment. And on 1.5, before the word services, add business.
And then again, Mr. Chair, on line 1.9, before services, add the word business.
Okay. In those two places?
Got a couple more.
Okay. Senator Bonhoff?
Yes.
Is there more?
Mr. Nauman?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bonhoff, I just looked at your draft quickly. I thought there were three locations where you were changing, adding the word business. Am I correct in that?
Where's the other one?
On line 1.12.
And on line 1.12.
Did you want it on?
Okay.
So,
all right. Senator Bonhoff moves that the A-3 amendment with the correction of on line 1.5 and 1.9. And 1.12, before services, add business. And if there are another area, add the word business before service. So on that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Senator Bond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And as members are aware, this has been before the committee previously, and there was great concern from many of the school districts as well as the various stakeholder communities about the language of the bill being prescriptive, as well as foreclosing, some concern over foreclosing some of the things they were currently doing that was working. And so we had a stakeholders meeting, and in addition, I've been meeting with people all during that time. Senator Olson has been on some of those meetings, and I know the members have also talked to their districts. What you have before you is a revised version taking all those comments into account, and so we're going to go through that today, and I know that in addition, some people still have concerns, and so hopefully they will get an opportunity to express those concerns. But you know, I just want people to know that we have heard those issues. In addition, we've been very fortunate that TIES has, on their at our request, done a survey of all the member districts to understand exactly what is happening out in the community. And so they are prepared, following my testimony, to present those survey results. And I think what you'll hear when they do that is that there is a lot of exciting things going on out in the community. And so it is our belief that this will, in fact, strengthen, add to what is already happening in a positive way. We have divided the bill into two parts. The first part is strictly a cooperative purchasing arrangement, where I'm going to actually let the Commissioner of Administration, Commissioner Badgerow, talk about that section. Commissioner Badgerow.
Welcome, Commissioner. It's nice to have you here.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Dana Badgerow, the Commissioner of Administration, and I'm very pleased to be before a committee I do not usually appear before. I'm here to really explain to you, and I think this came up in the prior hearing, how the state's Cooperative Purchasing Venture Program works. And what this bill would do would be that school districts would be asked to look to the state contract when they have a need for a good or a business service as an option, and unless, and with a number of exceptions, if they can do better with another cooperative, or if they can do better with some of these exemptions locally and so forth, or if they have an emergency need, they certainly are free to buy whatever it is they're seeking from those sources. But I just want to say, I want to describe the program very, very briefly. I know some of you are quite familiar with it. It's operated under authority of Statute 16C. It permits us to enter into these state contracts available to not only state agencies, but K-12, higher education, cities, counties, and townships. And, in fact, we have 828 of such contracts that are currently available. They cover a wide range of services. I'm going to hand out a little flyer here, that's kind of a promotional piece of material that talks about some of the contracts that are available. But, for example, school buses, books, copiers, cell phones, cleaning supplies, environmentally friendly cleaning supplies, flooring, carpets, furniture. 133 school districts are currently members of the Cooperative Purchasing Venture, as well as 10 charter schools, which shows, I think, that there is some opportunity. Membership used to cost $500, and it is now free. Joining this Cooperative Purchasing Venture is very easy. It's as simple as filling out a form. We think there's a great opportunity, as school districts need to save money, to be looking to these contracts. We know on average that we save about 19% over what we had been previously paying under these enterprise-wide contracts. I think we understand that there's at least $600 million worth of spending going on in goods and services in these school districts, and so we think if even a portion of those could be purchased under the state contracts and take advantage of our leveraged volume and incredible prices. Let me just give you two or three examples of those prices. If you need a copier, what we call a multifunction device, our recently negotiated statewide contract provides a 68% reduction over what the state had been previously been paying for those items. Cell phones, we achieved a 20% savings. Desk chairs, a 40% savings. Software license negotiations, we just recently concluded a major software license negotiation where we'd been previously paying 28% off of list, and we are now paying 52% off list. So our discount is over half. So we may not have what school districts need, but we're more than willing to fix that. If there are goods that the school districts buy in large volume, we are more than delighted to work with those school districts to develop standards and enter into statewide contracts, all at no cost to them and at no cost to the general fund. So I think with that, I just want to emphasize that we don't claim that we have the best price on everything. We think we've got some really, really good deals. But we want to ensure that schools have choice. And that's the way this bill, I believe, is currently drafted, so that they have a choice to be able to pick from among a variety of vendors to make sure that they're getting the appropriate best deal. So I think I just want to say the bottom line is we think that there are dollars to be saved. We do the work for school districts. We do the competitions. We do the negotiations. And the contracts are in place, and they can order online.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Commissioner. I want to some of the concerns that school districts have expressed to me throughout this process is, what if I have, you know, am positive I have a lower price? And as you can see, and as the commissioner said, that is spelled out. Or they say, what if I'm dealing with a local vendor and there's a relationship? And so I just want to make sure that people see numbers 1, 2, 3, and 4 are very clearly spelled out exemptions. And then there's been some concern around what kind of documentation we would be looking for if school districts take advantage of those exceptions. So I would, Commissioner, could you address the process for that?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, and members, as we see it, it would be simply a documentation in the file. Nothing really very formal. We're not looking for an enforcement process here, but simply documenting in the file that the item was purchased for the following reasons. And I think we also need to apply a de minimis standard. I don't think we're asking that this be applied to every $10 purchase that a school district might. And we can easily put in place additional rules, I think, that set a dollar threshold for those kinds of documentations.
Right. Senator
Mr.
Gurlach.
Chair.
Oops. Yeah, Senator Gurlach.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just ask a quick question to that point. So just so I'm clear, Commissioner, so you don't have to get some kind of a prior approval. If you meet these criteria, you can just do it, make the purchase, and you're saying just put it in the file. If it's questioned later, you can pull that out. You don't need a preliminary approval.
Mr. Chair and Senator Gurlach, we're trying to keep the bureaucracy to a minimum here.
Okay, Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. Is there a need, perhaps, to have a definition of goods and services in the proposal here? And also, I'm curious as to whether you go outside the state or outside the country if you're able to get goods or business services that would be cheaper, which potentially they could well be.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, again, we're not asking, and Senator Gerlach, Senator Wieger, we're not asking that extensive searches be done by school districts to try to find a cheaper price. We're asking that they simply check the state contracts and check the cooperatives' contracts, especially on some major purchases of large quantities of furniture, for example, or other kinds of supplies, and that they – all of our contracts, by the way, are – not offshore. 70% of our contracts are, in fact, with Minnesota businesses. So I don't know if that 70%. Helps answer. To the question of definition, I believe that Senator Bonhoeff's addition of the word business helps explain, I think, or limit the kinds of services. I might have Kent Allen, who is our chief procurement officer, if I might explain the kinds of services that we have under state contract today and what we do not have.
Thank you, Commissioner. Mr. Allen.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. My name is Kent Allen. I'm the Chief Procurement Officer for the state. We currently do a number of service contracts, and by the way, both goods and services are defined in the state procurement chapter, which is 16C. If you're looking for a way to move some of those definitions into this particular statute, that might at least be a template to start with. When we do services currently, one of the criteria we look at is whether there are state employees that are currently able and available to do the work. And the procurement laws are written in such a way that we would not normally be creating contracts if there are, in fact, current state employees who are doing the same sort of work. So the kinds of contracts that we have done historically and would be assuming we would do for school districts if this provision passes would be more of the occasional use types of contracts. And I can give you some examples. It's things where you wouldn't want someone on staff doing this full time because there's not the need, but where there's a periodic requirement for particular services. And examples would include scanning and imaging, translation services. We have contracts for written translation, sign language translation, spoken language translation services. Now, some of the ones that I had on my list actually probably would fall out of eligibility based on using adding the word business. But roof repair, asbestos removal are examples of state service contracts that have had a fairly considerable usage at the local government level. Courier services, shredding of confidential documents. These are the sorts of service contracts that the state has historically entered into.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bonhoeff.
The reason that we added the word business is one of the concerns brought forward, particularly by SEIU, who is here today, is a concern that we would, in fact, enter into negotiations with school districts saying that we wanted to replace their custodians or their bus drivers. And that is not the intent in this provision. The intent in this provision is to take advantage of the expertise that admin brings to us with regard to purchasing contracts and services.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Bonhoeff, based on the comments and description that Mr. Allen just shared with us, perhaps that rather than limiting to business services, I think his comment of they don't have contracts for things that have traditionally been a full-time employee. I mean, I think that still leaves the door open for districts to be able to, if they do wish to contract out for that, they can. But it doesn't fall within the parameters of this.
So it does not, we do not mandate that they go through some contract. I think that's what you were trying to ease, but then you now restricted it to some of the more, some of the services that might be incidental that that would not necessarily be called business. For example, I have a roofing company in my district that was concerned. They are a part of the state contract, and they were wondering by the old one whether they'd have to go through all this to be a vendor. That, I mean, they're on call to come and stop a leak now, I mean, kind of thing. And so that it would not necessarily be called a business service. So some of those kinds of things, if there's a state contract for it, and it's not something you traditionally employ a full-time employee for, I think is a better, maybe a better way of, or maybe there's another way we can have a slightly more expansive definition that takes full advantage of the state contract and yet sets some of the minds at ease that we're not trying to force some other decisions relative to how they overall conduct their business.
Mr. Chairman, perhaps given that the law in statute actually does state that we're not trying to take the place of full-time employees, maybe that is enough comfort language, but I think I would need to wait and talk to people and make that decision.
Okay, Senator Clark, Mr. Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could just add, having used the phrase business service wouldn't preclude school districts from using the other state contracts that are already available, such as the roofing, the asbestos abatement. The bill with the word business service just wouldn't require them to consider those to the extent it would require them to consider contracts for business services.
Senator Clark.
And Mr. Chair, and Senator Olson, that actually was mostly what my point was that this bill is going to require, with the exceptions that are permitted, particular purchasing, but it doesn't preclude the others, and perhaps maybe if we start here and see if people are taking advantage of those other services, that would be a good thing.
Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Allen and Commissioner Badgerow, you have done a really good job with your shared services program, and I know I've heard about it through other committees and been impressed with what you're all offering to the state and the local units of government, as well as nonprofits, which I had just learned about, and we were trying to spread the word that they could also come to your site and purchase through there. And the thing I'm curious about, I mean, you've been doing a really good job. So why do we need a services consultant for this?
Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling, we are not using a consultant for shared purchasing. So I have changed the bill because I did learn about what Commissioner Badgerow was doing and saw the tremendous work that they were doing. And so I don't think we need a consultant there. And so that is not in that section. I'm prepared to go through the second section, which is where the consultant is, and can do that now unless there's further questions on the first section.
Okay. Senator Bonhoff.
So the second section of the bill deals with shared services, consultation services. And here's where I'm going with this section. I have done a lot of research about what school districts are doing all over the country, and in some cases, whole states are doing, where they are re-engineering the way they do their processes. They're taking advantage of things like bringing the human resource functions together, payroll. There's a lot of work that has been done in the state of Minnesota, for example. We know Southwest Co-op has done tremendous work in shared services. And in different pockets, there's been tremendous work. But there's a lot of investigation that still needs to be done about the best way, particularly in these economic times, to work towards a maximum utilization of this new, it's a really a new concept of doing business. And so, for example, the state of Illinois has hired a consultant to do it for their whole state process. As I mentioned, Pennsylvania is just doing it for school districts. I have a stack of information on my desk of the different states that have entered into exploring this. But I was concerned about the need for school districts to maintain control. And so the way that this section is now written, instructs the Department of Education to enter into a 3-year contract with a consultant, and that consultant must work with school districts and their employees to create a shared services plan. They work with them to create it, and then they work with them to implement it. And then, and by the way, they're in also to include the co-ops, and I am planning to add in the words before the next committee, intermediate district, which I had neglected to do that and didn't bring it forward as an amendment, but I will do that, to work with those various entities in different regions, to help facilitate communication between the districts, to work with the nuances of what it is to be a rural district, and then with those districts, create a plan to utilize shared services, and then the only way that consultant gets paid is if the consultant and the school, the consultant will develop a measurement of, they say, we save this much money, but the school district would have to agree that that amount is in fact been saved by that work, because in the end, the control lies with the school district. The school district will report the savings, and if the school district says there was no savings as a result of working with the consultant gets zero. So there is a mechanism in, and the consultant doesn't get money based on the work that the commissioner's done with the school districts. They're not getting a percentage of goods. This is strictly when the two sides, after having worked together, say, wow, look what we've saved, and they can quantify it. They submit that to the Department of Education, and then most of the money goes right back to the classroom, and on the amount saved, they get whatever the department negotiated with that consultant, not to exceed 5%. So it's rather complicated, but it is done this way, number one, because I think there's that expression, you don't know what you don't know. I think this is pretty wide open territory. We don't know what's really possible if we looked at, on a statewide basis, how we could better use shared services. We know that there's a new trend in business and in various state agencies to go in that direction. What it'll mean to Minnesota, I don't know. The other thing is, it's limited. The consultant, you know, after they've done their work, they're gone, and the school districts will go on doing this.
Senator Terezri.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Bonhoeff, I got really confused with this piece.
A little louder.
From the commissioner's presentation, it seems that...
Okay.
There is a process the state has in place. It's a simple process. She said she doesn't need to create more bureaucracy. And then the only thing that we will have to do is instruct the Department of Education to put a form, and it comes to you, and it's done. And so, in other words, we will be kind of expanding this opportunity that we currently have to school districts within our current system. And in the first provision, in the first part of your bill, you said, you know, this is kind of a voluntary process. They can come and do it this way, or they can, if they have other reasonable regional needs, then they can do it in a different way. So what would this consultant actually do? We have a plan in place. The commissioner has this plan in place, which is simple. It will offer this opportunity to districts. They can choose to do it this way. They can choose to do it in another way. What would this consultant actually do?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Torres-Ray.
Senator Bonhoeff.
First of all, in that first section, we are requiring school districts to either use the state contract or to show an exception. So it's not quite, you know, as loose as the way that you stated it. So I just want to make sure that's the case. But with regard to the second part, you know, I don't know what Minneapolis is kind of a different animal. They are so large. When it comes to shared services, we may discover that based on Minneapolis's size, they could be a resource for surrounding districts in a way that we haven't before. The consultant may work with Minneapolis and Brooklyn Center, to do some kind of a shared model. We don't know what the consultant and the school districts, when working together in a region, will develop. And that's what this bill is about. This bill is about saying it's time that we consider doing business differently. We, you know, here we had three fund transfer bills before us where school districts doing business in the regular way with declining enrollment and all the economic factors, we can't sustain our model anymore. It's one thing to do shared purchasing, but basically the model of the way we have the number of our school districts and the way we are structured cannot be sustained with the money we have. And I don't have the solution to that, but I do know we have to begin exploring it. And so this is about the school districts being open to working with an outside expert on business process and reengineering to explore it. I don't know what they'll discover. But again, nobody is, I mean, the school district in the end will have to agree to the process.
Senator Treasury.
I have a follow-up, Mr. Chairman. Senator Bono, so is it your understanding that the school districts just don't do this currently, and so we need to have a consultant to ask them to do that? Or,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Torres Ray, and I'm concerned that we won't have the time today to hear from Dr. Schweitzer, because she did the survey, TIES did the survey, and you'll see there's a lot that's being done out there. So my understanding is not that they don't do it, but it's scattered. You know, some do it in this area, some do it in this area. Some parts of the state do it much less than other parts. We don't have a uniform and systematic way of doing this, and we all bring our own experiences and knowledge to what we do, and so, you know, this is about perhaps learning what we don't know.
Thank you.
Senator Saltzman, and then maybe we can bring some of the people that you have mentioned up to do some testifying. So, Senator Saltzman.
So just a brief clarification, Senator Bob. So if this way it might work is that you may have a consultant come in and work with you and say that you're able to save $50 per student on paper products. And so you're saving those dollars, and instead of saying, well, now we can buy more paper with the $47.50 that goes to the district, we're going to put that back into the classrooms. So is that, would that be an example?
Mr. Chair, Senator Saltzman, the theory is correct. However, it wouldn't happen with paper products because Commissioner Badgerow will have helped you do that, and so you'll get all of that. It will be more the outside-the-box kind of thinking savings, but yes.
So, Mr. Chair, that was just an example of how it might work, so that the money goes back into the classroom as opposed to buying more of the same or administration.
Yes.
Ms. Schweitzer?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, TIES did conduct a study.
Please give your name for the record.
Betty Schweitzer, Executive Director of TIES. TIES is a consortium owned by 38 school districts in Minnesota, a joint powers organization. And at the request of Senator Bonner and Senator Olson, we conducted the study that you have before you that shows the extent of shared services currently taking place in the state.
Before we, please, we'll have somebody hand those out. I think it's disruptive of the person testifying, Ms. Schweitzer.
I believe you have them at your desk.
Yes, we do. Please go ahead and give your testimony.
Okay. I have a summary of it in the white document. It is a summary of the report we do have. It shows on page 2 the methodology in the background and the number of districts. But if we turn to page 4, it shows the number of districts that participated in the study was about 75% of the districts in the state responded. And we broke the responses down by area of the state and by enrollment group, the sizes of the district. We did find in the study that the basic finding is that shared services is currently occurring throughout the state in all of the areas of the original bill. We have 65% of the districts are using shared services for supplies and equipment, 69% for technical services, 63% for communications and equipment services, 46% for food services, and 21% for transportation services. On page 5, it lists And really, if we go to page 6, it lists the percent of each of the categories, each of the areas under those categories, on who's buying from shared service providers and how many are buying from off the state contract. So we are seeing that, as one example, class supplies, 86% of the districts that reported in the study use purchase class supplies, and 38% buy from the state contract. The largest use of shared services is in the areas of accounting services, MARS reporting, and classroom supplies. The least is in the amount of transportation areas.
So, Ms. Schweitzer, the legislation that we have before us would recognize the work that's being done out there now, but kind of assist other districts to go ahead and either look at it or participate in it, or is that your understanding?
Yes. And we do have, there are a number of shared service providers already in the state. This other blue book shows that. We do have, TIES is one of 76 service providers in the state. And in the areas that are covered by the bill, there are 29 shared service providers. TIES is a regional management information center. We also have intermediate school districts, service cooperatives, telecommunication clusters, and education districts. On page 3 of this handout, it lists the service providers and what it is that they provide on the blue book. And then we also have included a list of the description of the service providers in the state and what it is that they do. So, and then this report then breaks it down by individual district in the state and what products and services that they are buying through a shared cooperative. So the intent of this study is to give a background of what is currently happening in the state, and it's showing that there is quite a bit. There's, but we are seeing ranging from in transportation supplies, 73% of the districts do not use shared services. They've reported that they do not use shared services for any of it. So, as Senator Bonoff mentioned earlier, there is pockets where there is no shared service use and other areas where it's very heavy.
Good. And Mr. Right. Chairman, thank I you. Just want to thank and acknowledge the expertise that TIES brings to the table in doing the survey work. I was pretty impressed with their quick turnaround and their use of technology to communicate information.
Okay. I have some others here. Should I just go down the list?
Sure. And I do have an amendment.
Okay. We do not have it. Or we do have it. And I believe is this the amendment that deals with the definition?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. This amendment, the A4 amendment, because of the concern around the table and the concern from some of the people prior to our meeting, we have done a more tight definition of business services.
Okay. And as the amendment's being handed out, this is the definition that tracks back to what Mr. Allen mentioned. And I would also mention to members that I believe this legislation has a number of other committees that it needs to go to. It would go to, from here, it would go to the full Finance Committee. But then I believe it also goes to Senator Rest Committee. And
I don't know.
Maybe that's it. About two committees. So
I don't know that it needs to go to Senate.
It would go from here to Finance, right? Senator Bonhoff moves the A4 amendment. Do you have any other comments on that?
Just to read, it says business services means both professional and technical service and service performed under a service contract for school district business management. It does not mean custodial, food, or transportation services.
Is that what
you're doing? So, Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Nauman?
I would also indicate that I'll just read the definition of goods since it's we use a cross-reference for that purpose. Under 16 CO2 sub 8, goods means all types of personal property, including commodities, materials, supplies, and equipment. And I think that's the reference that Mr. Allen spoke to earlier. He's indicating that's true.
Okay. All right. All right. On Senator Bonhoeff's amendment, Senator Roblin.
Mr. Chair, thank you. You know, if these services could be provided cheaper, why aren't we doing it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling, they may create that in the shared services optional arrangement. This is not a mandate that they do that. And what we're really talking about is people. We're saying that you do not have to replace your custodians. The intent of the bill was always around purchasing goods and business services. It wasn't to it wasn't meant to be looking at.
Okay. I think it's understood.
I understand.
Under the amendment, the A4 amendment, any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign?
No.
Motion is adopted. All right. We have Ms. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Stacia Smith, and I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. The Minnesota Chamber of Commerce is the largest business advocacy organization in the state, representing over 2,700 business members, and 80% of them are small businesses, meaning 100 or fewer employees. I'd like to thank Senator Bonhoeff for offering this bill. The Chamber supports the shared services component because it promotes cost-effective practices for school districts' ancillary services. This would allow more dollars to be available for academic instruction, we think. We appreciate the changes that were made to the bill that have made the necessary accommodations for local business relationships. This makes it a more flexible bill while maintaining the original intent. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Thank you, Smith. Carol Peters. Please give your name and welcome.
Hi, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thanks for giving me this opportunity to address Senate File 10 and the proposed changes. My name is Carol Neders. I'm the executive director of SEIU Local 284, representing about 8,000 support staff, school employees around the state. And although this recent amendment helps to further address some of the concerns that I've brought up with Senator Bonhoeff earlier and this morning, it doesn't go all the way yet. And so I still feel like within the room there is some misunderstanding on some definitions. And so I think like vendors still should be defined, and now business services is taken care of. It still would impact people and folks that we represent. And so one of the items that I brought up earlier is in the exemptions item one, it allows for a lower price for comparable goods and services. And so my suggestion was that it would also have that comparison, kind of apples to apples, when they're going out and looking for this for wages and benefits, so that you're not undermining what's happening currently by just saving on that end and not making any real change. So that was one of the items that I brought up. I do feel a bit that, though, the bill itself kind of puts the cart before the horse, in that the survey is just coming back now, studying what's happening, and that I feel like that should be done prior to people making or the legislation coming forward, and then having a discussion around the results of the survey and if there's need for legislation from that point. There is a lot of shared work that's happening out there already, and I'm not sure that folks were aware of the amount of shared services that are going on in districts around the state. There has been funding issues for a number of years, and folks have been extremely creative, I think, to try to meet the needs of budgets and to manage that. So I would just put that out there. The piece item that was pointed out in Section 3, Subdivision 1, that the first sentence, school districts, charter schools, and their employees must work with shared service consultants, that's fine, but like, I just want to have it out there that support staff employees will not have the ability to say, this is not good, drop it. They're not going to have any authority to make that decision. So to be part of the conversation and hopefully part of the solution would be something folks would want. And I will tell you that there are many districts that we represent where there are labor management committees, and these discussions are going on how to save. And so support folks are a part of those discussions, but they are not the ones that make the decision at the end. And so want to point that out. One of the biggest pieces I feel like is missing from this, if you're going to look at shared services and try to make a serious impact on budgets and funding, would be to include health care in this. Like, that's kind of the elephant that's not in the room and not a part of this. And that is the cost driver that is literally pushing budgets over the edge in school districts around the state and small business. And so, like, if that were a part of this, we could fix a few problems with putting health care into this.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bonhoff.
You know, I think actually I was always for, as I recall, you talked about doing the statewide health insurance, and some of us felt that it ought to be, unless you have a lower price for comparable goods or services, which was basically when school districts were able to get health, you know, lower at a lesser price than what the mandated required. So, in fact, I'm just suggesting that that would be in keeping with the way this bill is written.
Maybe a question for Commissioner Badgerow. Does the Department of Administration actually, do you get into health care, or is that the Department of Commerce at the state level?
Mr. Chair and Senators, we do not. We are not the administrators of the state health plan. That's the Minnesota Management and Budget, formerly DOER. We do have a multi-state program to buy medical supplies and drugs, which we run on behalf of 43 states, and we do get about a 2-4% price advantage on that contract, but I'm not sure that school districts are really big into medical supplies and drugs. Hopefully not.
Senator Salzman.
Just a brief note on that, Mr. Chair. I do have a bill that has been submitted that would study CGIP and or PEEP being involved in this. I think it's important to have that sort of information before we move forward on health care, and I'd be happy to have that heard in this committee.
Okay. Very good. So we're trying to figure out how we can save some money for school districts. And next week, members, we'll be getting into the mandate area. So sharpen your pencils. Please go on. We have session shortly.
We're under call.
We are under call. So would you like to do some comments?
Mr. Chair, no. I think Carol said everything that needs to be said.
I have one final comment, Mr. Chair, if I may. Yes. And that is the consultant that's also a part of this. I really feel like we have some very, very highly qualified, highly skilled, and educated folks in school districts that could be doing this, and we don't need to bring in another entity yet to deal with this. So that I would just like to put it out there that I feel like we've got the right people already. They know what's going on, and they should be the ones that are moving this. So, thank you.
Senator Bonhoff?
Mr. Chair, I know Senator Koch seems to.
Oh, Senator Koch.
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonhoff, I really appreciate you bringing this bill forward. I support the idea of it. A lot of my districts in my area have been doing this. They're part of this study that was done. But then when Senator Stump brought up the idea of the mandates, which I think is another part of reducing costs, I'm just that's, I guess, my main concern with the bill, and I don't know how you address that. But, on one hand, we're trying to get people to share services, and I appreciate that. On the other hand, we're trying to reduce mandates, and I appreciate that. this sort of combines both.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Koch, I appreciate that. And that is why I split the bill in half, so that the mandate part of it is really about buying goods. And you can have, and there's many exceptions that will allow you to bypass it. But the work with a consultant is very flexible. You will figure out, if you don't see a way to have any savings, you won't have any. So...
Do we have somebody from the MSBA or from some of the education organizations?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes. Grace, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Grace Kelleher with the Minnesota School Boards Association, and we... appreciate the opportunity to get up and testify on this today. This is a draft we actually got this morning, and most of our concerns have been expressed by members. We are concerned this creates a new mandate for school districts. If you look at certainly requiring us to purchase goods and business services through the Department of Admin, that's an opportunity we presently have, members, and we've got, I think at last count, 99 school districts who do use state contracts, but an awful lot who choose not to and use them to leverage other dollars going forward. I realize the exemptions going down on Subdivision 2 are available to school districts, but our concern happens to be that paper has to come out. Somebody's got to write down the reason why you're not taking the state contract and keep it and have it available for your auditors to look at the end of the year. And there's not only dollars that are required to look at that paper, but staff time that takes to develop those and make sure you meet the criteria. The consultation services, we have large concerns that we need to bring an outside consultant. I mean, there's no description of where this individual gets their background, what kind of expertise they bring to the table, what exactly they're going to do. But there is a requirement that school districts must, on page 2, work with a shared consultant. And it seems to be under 2 that consultant is going to create a state plan. I'm not sure how that helps individual districts lose money more. And, Mr. Chairman, I would suggest that for probably the last 10 years, school districts have been in a budget cutting or budget hold move. And the best deal in the world, if you want to get a piece of information out, is to say, I can get a better price. And school districts will gravitate to those opportunities. And I think that TIES report, if you actually take a look at all those dots on where we do share and where we do come across, this is a reaffirmation that this is an opportunity we do. Where we really need some help is somehow putting this information all together and making it easy for school districts to find. So if you're in a small district where there's a superintendent and 300 members, it would be nice to have an e-mall or a Wikipedia or something where the responsibility is on the vendor to post their information and what they're willing to do for school districts. And from what I can't tell, that's going to be available. And though I appreciate Senator Bonhoeff and her willingness to work with us and share ideas, this is not something we can be in favor of. And, in fact, I think flies somewhat in the face of mandate reform. I hope there's still opportunities, Mr. Chairman, to work to get something districts can actually save money on.
I think that was a good suggestion, Ms. Keller, on the gathering of that information. Yeah, there are some. I mean, just in here, there's quite a bit of gathering of information. But I still think there are, as pointed out, there are, you know, different areas that are not participating that could be savings to those districts, which may help reduce some costs. It's not, I'm sure this will be a kind of a work in progress as it keeps moving, but let's hear from Mr. Kuhnquist and then maybe have some questions. You can stay there if you would like. Mr. Kronquist.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Scott Kronquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, and I'll try to be brief. I want to echo much of what Ms. Kelleher said. We do appreciate Senator Bonhoff bringing this forward. We certainly share the goal of trying to save money for school districts, trying to increase shared services, shared purchasing. And I think, Senator Koch, you hit the nail on the head, really. The trick is, how do we encourage all districts to move towards more, you know, purchasing, to get joint purchasing and service sharing without creating more bureaucratic, you know, mess and more creating hurdles and actually then especially not undermining what's already going on in school districts. So we continue to have concerns. We don't think we quite have the balance struck in this draft, and we're hoping as we move forward that we can bring some better balance to it. Just some quick examples. Under the joint purchasing right now, if you're a district that is already taking advantage of joint purchasing, and many districts are doing it through not only looking at the state contracting, but are in joint purchasing agreements with other school districts, with cities and counties, with even multi-state contracts. If you're one of those districts, I would argue that you're actually going to this Section 1 is actually going to cost you money, because you're already taking advantage of all the joint purchasing, so you're not going to save any more money, but now you have a new burden on you to document every time you're going to make a purchase. You're going to have to show why you're not using the ones outlined in the bill. We think similar concerns arise with under the shared services operation. And so to try to be brief, Mr. Chairman and members, we think maybe a better approach would be if we think we need to provide further incentives or encouragement to get districts to move this way, maybe the first step should be for the state to hire a consultant and the state to do a lot of this upfront work, interview, work with the service cooperatives, the regional management associations, interview some of the school districts that aren't taking advantage of shared purchasing opportunities right now, ask them why, what are the hurdles, haven't they moved in this direction, and then to come back to you with recommendations on how to move forward and how to move from 75% of districts taking advantage of these services to 100%. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Okay. Good. I thought I had heard Commissioner Badgerow say that the documentation part would be relatively informal.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Senators, I think the intent here is that it be a simple notation in a purchase file or on a purchase order as to why a particular vehicle was chosen other than the ones required in this bill. Nothing elaborate and complicated. And furthermore, I didn't really testify extensively, but using the state contracts is an enormous reduction in paperwork and bureaucracy for those districts who are not now doing it. We do all the work. We do the competition, we do the negotiation, the contract is available, and it's a simple order. So we're hoping, actually, the goal here is to reduce the bureaucracy and paperwork that school districts are required to engage in.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner Badgerow, I thought I heard you say that there were 133 districts and 10 charter schools that participate in the state contract. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, there are 130 school districts who are officially members of our cooperative purchasing venture and 10 charter schools. We believe there may be others who are using the state contract who have not gone through the state contract process, but we don't have good data on that. But we know that there are many school districts. We have from the technology purchases, for example, very, very accurate data on which school districts are purchasing computers, and we know that there are school districts who are not using the state contracts, and we have the best Apple computer deal in town.
So, Mr. Chairman,
Senator Olson.
So I had a question of Ms. Kelleher or Mr. Kronquist, is if there's that few districts out of 338, why not? Why would you not be a part of that to take advantage of this? Or can you give me some explanation? I think part of our reason in going forward with this and in asking the Ties, who actually volunteered to do this gratis for us, is to find out just what kind of arrangements are out there and what is being done. There's a lot of districts that are using it minimal ways, and we, you know, this doesn't dig into the depths of reasoning that's there. And Ties, even if you notice on the charts
has an open circle in some places where they knew that people were using that service, even though the school district didn't indicate it. So it's a little bit richer than that. But are there that many school districts that just decide that the state contract isn't worth it for any single thing, and are going to do it otherwise, regardless of whether they would save money or not?
Mr. Kroon, please. Oh,
Mr. Chairman and Senator Olson, first of all, we'd say fine. Let's mandate that school districts have to consult the state contract before they move ahead. But it's the documentation part that we have a problem with. Why do we need to document if we find that we can get a better price elsewhere? Why do we need to document that each time that happens? And another question that I would raise is that, in fact, there are a number of districts that it is, well, let me put it this way, Mr. Chairman, members. It is not uncommon for school districts to consult the state contract and find that they can buy an item elsewhere at a better price. That occurs quite frequently, from my understanding.
Well, Mr. Chairman, then you just answered that when they do so, to note that they got a better price than the state contract was all that was asking in keeping it in their file. That doesn't seem to be a particularly ominous note. What is your lower limit for having to go out for bids for products?
Members, I want to just take this break in action here to say that my suggestion on this is that we I'd like to move the bill to finance, but I would also recommend that we keep it for inclusion or possible inclusion in the omnibus education bill, so that way it can work its way through the committees as needed. And then we can also have this ongoing discussion. Mr. Lindell.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'll be very, very brief. Just a couple of things. Having worked in these wars over the years on between various cooperation bodies, there are some things in here that still confusing to me, and I think that we need to work forward and continue discussion. We certainly support that. I do also want to thank Senator Bonoff for coming forward. I think it's a discussion that we have to have. When I look at the exemption in Subdivision 2, this may be nitpicking, but in Clause 3 and Clause 4, the words urgent and reasonable, and just coming out of the Type 3 discussion where the word normal has caused a lot of problems, I think the words like urgent and reasonable probably need to be fleshed out a little bit more, because obviously that the Type 3 discussion, we thought we had something very clear on that, and it turned out to be not so. The only other thing that I would say is when we look at short-term and long-term, and again, I sometimes get up here and sound like the old grandfather sitting on the porch, but having worked a lot of this history in cooperative agencies, we really need to be careful about that. We look at both short and long-term costs. The intermediates and the computing regions oftentimes was the implicit cost in creating those sharing of direct services or sharing of indirect services that individual districts over time could do it more cheaply because the contract costs of the cooperative unit had gone to a much higher level. I know that that's not Senator Bonoff's intent, but I think it's something that we do need to keep in mind as we move forward, that if what we create here that comes out of this ends up having a considerable cost, it in and of itself destroys itself over time.
Okay. Did I miss a question? Somebody else? Okay.
I didn't get an answer to mine.
Sorry.
I do. I'll wait till
Senator
finance.
Okay.
I'll wait till the next committee, Mr. Chair.
All right. Ms. Doslin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Valerie Doslin, and I represent the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials, and they are your school business managers and accounting staff and payroll staff, et cetera. And again, like everyone else, we'd like to thank Senator Bonoff for taking this forward. And MASBO is very interested in trying to encourage their member districts to participate in shared services to the extent that they are not now. Just a couple of things we would hope would be discussed. One is we'd like to really rather than a mandate, look at why are those districts not those districts that are not or that didn't answer the survey are not participating or doing these shared services. We'd like to find out what barriers exist and what can we do to try to work with those districts to try to do more shared services. And I will continue to talk with Senator Bonhoeff, but we do have concerns about the language that was adopted in the A4 amendment in regards to the definition of professional and technical services, or excuse me, the definition of business services. And my interpretation is just that includes every district that has a business manager, every district that has their own payroll staff, they will have to go through these processes to determine that there was in the exemptions to prove that there was a savings. This would also include the IT staff, your print staff, etc. So I would just like to continue to work with Senator Bonhoeff and trying to more clearly clarify that definition.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonhoeff.
Mr. Chair, I will work with Valerie and ask that Commissioner Badgerow work with her as well so that we iron out what those concerns are.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Dozlin. Ms. Gilbert?
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Mary Gilbert from the St. Paul Public Schools, and we do share some of the same concerns that have been expressed. I'd like to speak to just a couple of things, though. The exemptions in Section 2 don't allow for an exception related to quality.
Could you pull the mic just a little closer, please?
The exceptions in Section 2, we appreciate that they were put in, but it doesn't allow the district to preclude anything based on quality. And, for example, it says the proximity, but it doesn't regard the quality of a vendor. And since the state, I hadn't thought of interpretive services, for example, being a service that we would vend for. And we do have in-house and we do contract for interpretive services. But the quality of them, particularly for our population, really varies based on actually skill and availability of certain rare languages. So that would just be an example. We have also had around our highly mobile and homeless transportation in the other category kind of uneven quality, and so we're certain, you know, we actually have a specific contract with certain safety measures, training measures, that kind of thing that we have in place. It's possible that the good or service in Section 1 would have different specifications for the type of payroll system or printing or whatever that we have that we've already purchased. That a good or service would be required as kind of a maintenance of a contract agreement that we had when we purchased equipment. I'm just suggesting that these might be some further exceptions that you might want to think about. If a good or service is not specified in the shared service agreement, it would be exempt. It would reduce the record keeping. It may affect if our Board of Education has a labor management agreement as a part of a particular project. I think I got my cutoff. The other thing I think that it would be important to include is that the payment to the consultant or the department should only be made if there is actually a savings of greater than 5%. And that way, I think districts could be ensured that they would never end up with less than the amount of money that they were supposed to get under the formula.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Gilbert. I'm sure, Senator Bonhoeff, you're making notations on this.
My staff is.
It reminds me a little bit of the work we did many years ago now when we were trying to institute some change. And it seems like sometimes change is very difficult to try to do. And I would also remind members that this is only a couple days after we had our latest budget forecast, which means that very soon we are trying to figure out how we're going to balance that budget for the next 4 years, not 2 years, but 4 years. So in all seriousness, we do have to look at ways of trying to maximize our dollars, trying to look at how we can keep our education system moving forward in quality at a very reasonable or at a reasonable price. And so this isn't a savior for all of those ills, but I do think it tries to make those creative juices that how do we solve problems? It reminds us of that, and I think that that's the purpose of what Senator Bonhoeff is trying to do here. So, and I appreciate the work that the Department of Administration is doing and everybody else, but not to put the weight on you, Mr. Grathwall, but...
A moment.
I think that phone call was...
the last chance.
So we do need to move on. Right. The majority leader is calling, so...
Mr. Chair, members, Jim Grathwall, Minneapolis Public Schools. So at the risk of testifying in favor of applehood and motherhood and apple pie, we strongly support going forward with shared services and assisting school districts in ways to do that. We're heavily engaged in doing that. And the conversation this morning and the conversation on previous bill drafts have been very fruitful. I think the testimony you've heard is about making sure the language supports. I think this is going to be one of those things where districts cooperating and communicating amongst themselves will build the vehicle and figuring out, make sure that we don't have business processes added on, which we're trying to get rid of.
Right.
So... We're very much in favor of legislation that supports further cost savings through shared services and cooperative purchasing, just figuring out how to get the language there. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Grathwall.
Mr. Chair, at this time, could I move the A3 file, Senate file number 10, as amended, be moved to finance?
Okay.
With no recommendation?
I would add that Senate File 10, as we did, I think, the amendment was adopted.
Yeah.
Okay. The amendment, the A3 amendment was adopted, but I would move, I would add to your motion that we would direct staff to, I believe there were an amendment that was a verbal amendment that was added to the business in front of service, that staff would add at the appropriate places, and I believe that was it, right?
Mr. Chairman, need to include in the motion the technical authority to the staff to fix and conform with the business amendment that was done before, and then I think you want to send this to the finance.
Correct. And then we would also, I think, the next motion would be to lay it on a table for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. So,
Mr.
Senator,
Chair.
Oh, we'll just move... The motion will be to move it to the Committee on Finance. Senator Hand.
Mr. Chairman, that was my question. As you'd indicated before that you wanted to have the bill in both places, and I'm wondering, can we do that? Is that permissible?
No, the motion is to move it to Finance.
Okay.
And as amended, with the caveat that technical changes be made. So, on that motion, any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. And thank you, committee members. Next week, we will have the difficult challenge of mandates.